This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey everyone! Do you wish you were somewhere sunny, but are dealing with another crazy spring? There's a solution to get that feeling. I'm grabbing a Hawaiian Breeze 5-Hour Energy and escaping there in my mind! Sports fans, ever stay up late for the game and drag the next day? A 5-Hour Energy shot will fix that no problem. 5-Hour Energy's website has tons of flavors, over 15 to choose from. Watermelon, Tropical Burst, Blue Raspberry, and even hard-to-find ones like Strawberry Lemonade and Extra Strength Fan Fuel. There's a flavor for everyone. You can even build your own 12 or 24-pack and have it delivered. Or grab a shot at your local store. They're everywhere! And it's basketball season. My schedule is packed, and I don't want to miss a second, so I grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They're perfect for back-to-back games or when my team plays late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going through the game and the next morning. Visit 5hourenergy.com for deals and to stock up before tip-off.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Attitude.
You ready? Man, we're feeling good on a Friday here in the Loop on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you, baby, man. I needed that. And it's been fun. We were just talking about the U of H beatdown of SIU Edwardsville. Y'all were giving us adjectives and really just y'all started getting the phrases, and that was fun. Somebody said Wheatley High School would have given the Cougs a better game. That's funny. Somebody said it was a grandma using her Switch on your ass. I don't want to, but I have to, baby.
Hey, that stuff is real right there, man.
It's real.
That's tough. Hey, keep sending those in. I'm having fun with them, so we can keep having fun with them as a whole. I don't know if anybody else was watching this and keeping an eye out for this on a you know, relatively busy sports day. Obviously, there was a lot of college basketball going on. But under the radar, in the middle of the day, in fact, while we were still on the air, the Boston Celtics made it official that they are having a little bit of a sale going on there. Wick Rosbeck, who has been the owner for that team for a while, he saw them through the, obviously, championship that they won this past year, and he made it known after the championship that he was looking to, you know, sell the team. That's come to fruition now. Bill Chisholm, who is the managing partner of Symphony Technology Group, is buying the franchise. None of that really matters to you personally. This matters, though. $6.1 billion with a B.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's 6.1.
Say that again.
$6.1 billion.
For the Celtics. Now, I get the Celtics are that brand and all that stuff, but that is resetting the market.
Even there, I think they're probably, and I haven't looked at like the Forbes valuations kind of things or like the rankings, but they're not the highest valued organization.
Right.
Like maybe top five when you talk about highest valued in NBA. Mm-hmm. And they're starting to get into the $6 billion is what they're sold for. And I think obviously one thing that we found recently is just sports teams, the valuation just seems to continue to go up and up in a way that makes me question, mind you, what is peak sports valuation? Because I mean, everything has a level of peak.
You would think
at some point, like it can't just be speculative to the point where it just never finds its ceiling. However, we ain't gotten close yet, apparently, or at least we have not found that yet as they continue to go up. That was announced yesterday. But I think what brings this back around is that with that valuation, we're seeing sports get to a place where the ownership level is, like, it changes, right? I feel like we've reached a new tax bracket, so to say, of ownership. It's one of the things I've talked about in basketball where there was a point in time where, you know, you could just be like a rich person to have a basketball team, and it could just be this novelty thing that you had outside of your thing, and you could just kind of be a normal business owner. And then we got to a place where you needed to be like a bona fide multimillionaire. You had to have a lot, and now you've got to be, you've got to have probably a conglomerate.
You have to be a consortium.
A consortium of really, really rich people. And now we're even getting private equity, because in order to have the amount of money that it takes to run all these things and have the valuation so high, you need money from all sorts of different places. But that also takes, as you move to a new tax bracket, the people that have been in the lower tax bracket and are finding that it costs more, it's at least just, it's more lucrative to maybe move on. You're seeing them sell. We saw Mark Cuban, a dude who seems like he is in love with that Dallas Mavericks team, sell his team, and then it immediately fall into disrepair. but like we've seen those things happen, dudes that you never thought would sell. And that brings us back to Houston, because you have three ownership groups that seem like they absolutely love what they have. However, who could be enticed to sell?
Look, I think this is what you need to pay attention to as a Houston sports fan. You know, and you hit on one of the points I definitely wanted to kind of bring home. The days of a really rich guy owning a team are numbered.
Yes.
It's consortiums. It's private equity firms. It's however you want to put it, groups of billionaires and investors buying teams. Let's keep this in mind. Tillman Fertitta is probably the richest just in terms of personal wealth that he has developed himself.
Ooh, I want to do this Google search.
Jim Crane would be up there. But, like, everybody has a price. Everyone. Like Jim Crane bought the Astros not even 15 years ago for $680 million.
Oh, yeah. He'd make a great profit if
$3 billion, easy. That's the floor. $4 billion he could sell it for. The Astros, especially as the Celtics sale is elevating these prices for everyone. So I kind of posed this question to myself, and we have to share it with the class here, especially you two guys.
Oh, I didn't study.
Especially you two guys.
By the way, the Astros' current valuation as of 2024, according to Forbes, of course, one thing that we continually find is that the Forbes valuation is somehow
low.
Under low every time. $2.4 billion.
Yeah, so I think
as of last year,
I think $3 billion is the floor.
I could see it.
He bought it less than 15 years ago for $680 million.
Must be nice.
So the question becomes, which local team would be most tempted to cash out?
All right, so we're doing the power ranking.
Well, I think it's interesting because I think Jim Crane won championships, really rich dude, he owns less of a percentage of the Astros than either of the other two owners. You know, there's partners.
Yeah.
I think he'd be very willing to cash out.
You think so?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think he enjoys owning a baseball team as well.
I don't think he doesn't.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I don't think he doesn't. He's won championships. What would $3 billion, four times, five times the money that he spent on it, six times, whatever it is. I think it'd be very enticing. And the other thing is, he's got a family member, a son in the business. But I don't know how big, like, they are in terms of his type of passion, you know, for the club.
That's also another thing is, like, you talk about generations, right, when those things turn over. And Jim Crane, I mean, we know he's a dude that he played baseball. Like, this is still a lot closer to the passion ownership that we've seen in, you know, decades past in sports ownership. Yeah, that's a good question to ask if you know year over year, or if, you know, generation over generation is the same. Because when you brought this question up, my immediate thought was, well, I think I know the team that is least likely. And my thought went to Cal McNair and the Texans because of the legacy elements of this. And I think you brought up a good counterpoint.
I don't think that's right. I think the least likely, and then we'll get to the Texans, why I think they might be likely. And let's be very clear here. They don't want to sell the team. You know, there's a lot of reason to believe that they won't. But I think the least likely, I think Jim Crane would be the most likely. The least likely would be Tillman Fertitta, which is kind of counterintuitive because this is a guy that builds businesses, makes a lot of money. So you would think, hey, NBA teams' values are going up. We got a good young squad. It looks good. We got the arena, you know, all this other stuff working for us. But I think Patrick Fertitta, Tillman's son, like, this is his passion project.
Yeah.
That dude is a Rockets freak.
Yeah, a lot of people, I mean, I feel like he's running the Rockets as we speak, man. I think he's doing a lot of stuff with the Rockets and Tillman kind of, I don't want to say took a back seat, but
he's got other things going on, too.
Yeah, he got Patrick running the show pretty much.
Yeah, Patrick, loves the Rockets. I think they're third on the list. Here's where it gets interesting with the Houston Texans.
Okay, so you just to emphasize again, you think that they are the least likely to be enticed to sell when it comes
to the Rockets.
The Rockets, right? When it comes to all of the three major American sports teams here locally.
And as much as the McNairs love it and have, you know, I can tell you, I don't think they have any intention of it. I think there's something out there that might maybe factor in a couple things. They want a new stadium or a renovated stadium, and there's a lot of hurdles to get over. I mean, the county, the Texas state landmark, you know, designation, which is not that big of a hurdle, but it's a hurdle anyway, with the Astrodome, you know, that type thing. That could end up being a frustration thing. For them, as all these teams, we were talking about Cleveland earlier, getting their stadiums, getting their renovations, all this other stuff. I think it could just kind of beat them down and be a roadblock, you know, to them wanting to do what they really want to do with this organization.
That's interesting because I always think of, if you're talking about stadiums and how they relate to a ownership sale or transition to ownership, I always view it as the opportunity to add an asset to a sales portfolio, right? If you are selling a team, having a relatively new stadium or something like that, I always view it as, oh, well, this is something that adds as a plus. I never view it as a potential negative.
Because all the things they got to do, they don't have any control. It's not their stadium.
No, you're right. But I think that also adds to why it might be less likely, is because even if they wanted to sell, then a potential buyer would have to consider, oh, this is a challenge that I'm walking directly into and paying for the right to be able to jump into. But I still don't think that they are like, and maybe this, I don't know, is this hope?
No, I don't think so. I'm saying the question is like, might be most enticed.
Right. No, you're right. I just think they have, when I say they, I'm speaking specifically about Cal and Hannah. The fact that we know them as Cal and Hannah, that we can think of what they look like, which is not something that a lot of owners you can say necessarily, or we know their voices. We hear their voices every day on this show.
They
right?
come in this studio.
They are very public. They've attached their personal personas and brands to this organization. That feels like it's harder to untangle, especially because that's something that they've done relatively recently as well.
Yeah, but I think there's a second thing that needs to sort of be mentioned.
Okay.
And anybody who thinks, oh, you guys with the Texans. No, I'm just going to tell you right now.
Guys getting buried by the Texans.
this will be exhibit A that we're not. There's been some family drama. There's been some family drama with the McNairs. And anybody who follows.
Is this the generational type thing where, I mean, sometimes where anybody who passes and then you get the family? I mean, we know this on a low level. Where
we go through this with people with no money.
Right. Who get the house?
I told the story on air.
I need the land.
Sally took the TV.
Hey, I've told the story. My brother tried to jack the rest of us on a very low amount of money with my parents' will. I mean, it happens everywhere. So, but here's the thing, and anybody who follows the news in this city remembers, Cal's brother caused a big stir about, Janice and, you know, her ability to run the team.
Sorry, that's Miss Janice.
Miss Janice, yes.
We are still in Houston, Texas, so you're going to put some respect on that name.
Love that lady. And all that. There's some family drama that has since sort of gone away in terms of, that.
Publicity of it.
Yeah, the publicity of it. But there are different people pulling, and it's not Bob anymore. You know, there are people. Anytime you get family drama with a lot of money on the line, much less a little money, like we were talking about.
Yeah,
certain things can happen. You know, it can get a little sticky.
Grandma promised me that ring. You can't have a ring. It's my ring.
Exactly. So I think, again, for the third time, they have no intention of selling. But I think there are things in terms of the question of most likely to be tempted. Crane won. I think Cal and Hannah too. And then Fertitta.
And I think when you're talking about Crane, and again, I'm still in a place where I'm largely in a place, and maybe I'm just leaning too heavily on a dude who loves baseball and that passion for having, you know, a baseball team in your control. Like, he seems like almost a level of throwback in a way, because I don't know how many team owners still exist in the wider world of sports that still view it not entirely as like a vanity project, but kind of still in that vein where, like, hey, man, this is a thing that I have because it's cool to have and I like it, right? As opposed to somewhat more of the business proposition of it. But it's hard-pressed to not think about the ways in which he's willing to spend to a point.
Yeah.
And, you know, with some parameters, and if that then factors in it at any point where he's like, all right, well, somebody's willing to bring a whole bunch of money so I don't have to keep playing, mm-hmm. you know, the luxury tax game or what have you. The luxury tax, mind you, the baseball owners have put in on yeah. themselves, right? It's yeah. not like this was a thing that was there. But still, that is a boundary and a barrier that exists that it seems very evident. He's very careful to navigate. And that does make me wonder if a big offer comes in that he wouldn't jump at the opportunity to not have to like keep worrying about that in the same way.
But do you feel like Tillman, with him being the businessman that he is, that he wouldn't jump on the offer if it was an offer you can't refuse?
That is interesting.
Because he is the business person, and that wouldn't be a good business move if he said no because of my son or whatever. He might take the business part of it and go somewhere else.
My thought process is, I think Tillman also very much enjoys being in the business of sports. We've seen him put in offers for other things, including recently, like for the WNBA for mm-hmm. an expansion. I think he really likes being in sports. I wonder if he wouldn't sell a portion of it, like sell a percentage.
Might go to be Mark Cuban or something like that.
Not even that far, like because he sold the controlling interest. I think he would want to keep the controlling interest, but maybe sell a portion of his stakes to maybe cash out a little bit of money if that was there. But I think that he really does enjoy having that control. And you mentioned it, right? Like you don't have the opportunity to pass on the control to your son, someone who is very intrigued in this, if you're going and selling this thing.
And Figgy, I think your point is interesting in this regard, because as much as I have him third, we never know like what the books really are, like who paid for what and how much of this and that and all that.
Yeah.
But the general reporting is Tillman probably took bigger loans than either Jim Crane or obviously Callan Hanna.
Mm.
So when there's some big loans out there and all of a sudden the Celtics sold for $6.1 billion,
depending on where the payback of those are, you might be able to return investment to investors very quickly.
Yes, and cash out nicely. But I just feel like Patrick is just like he ain't gonna let go of this thing if he has anything to do with it.
I don't think nobody's selling anytime soon.
No, that's a good way to put it. Yeah.
Is there anyone that you... All right, that's not a good way. I was about to say, is there anyone that you want? But... Fair enough. From the 713, mark my words, private equity getting involved in sports is going to be disastrous. PE kills every industry. And I think it's because, again, you're trying to squeeze industries, sometimes industries that are not necessarily built for profit in some ways, mm-hmm. or at least profit in the ways that we want, that, you know, I guess a investor would want, are then made to be profit generators. In order to do that, you kind of strip it down.
Yeah.
One thing that I have used as a level of solace against my general, like, to be completely honest and forthcoming, my general distaste for the way the kind of private equity has gone about operating mm-hmm. in various businesses is they would not have, in sports, they have not gotten to a place where they're allowed to have controlling interests.
Not yet.
To make those decisions.
Not yet.
And yet is the operative word there. Yeah. So as long as it remains that, you know, there's parameters, I think in the NBA, what is it, 8 or 10% is the max that private mm-hmm. equity can get in. I think football is the sport that I was trying to speak to. In the NFL, I don't know that we've seen anything go over the percentages of like 4 to 8% somewhere in there. At this point, it's just putting money in and seeing money return back. And as it's currently operated in sports without any investment or any like control by private equity mm-hmm. interests, they're still making money hand over fist. And I think that keeps all of the other potential negatives of private equity.
I don't think that the texture is wrong, but I also feel like it's not going to stop. It's not going to stop anytime soon. And those big money, like it sounds weird for us to say, because we'll take $1 million, you know, but people who have a franchise like Tillman, well, whatever.
Yeah, what's the real difference? A mere $2 billion? Come on now.
Like Tillman and Jim Crane, who've made, you know, a couple billion, which sounds so stupid, but
a couple billion.
You know, but they're all over the place in their investments, and somebody offers six?
That's a great point. Yeah. When you say all over the place in investments, you mean like they're not liquid. It's something to note that, hey, your valuation is cool, but how much of that is liquid? And it's a lot different if somebody's like, here's all this value right up front.
Here's liquidity. I got it for you right here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like the business part of it, like, mm-hmm. man, like if somebody offer you that, it's like, man,
they're worth,
this is my baby, but man.
Right, they're worth, let's say, $2 billion. I'm just picking that number out of thin air. But they can be cashed out for $6 billion. Yeah. You know, that's a difference. There's a big difference.
Yeah. You saying cash out.
Anybody could get bought too.
Yeah.
Everybody has a number. You saying cashed out like that made me think of the casino. And for some reason, now I'm thinking about like just going into the Texans and all right, I'm sitting down at the table. I got all these chips. And all right, time to cash out. That's a weird image that I have there. All right. So just a little casual sports finance conversation mm-hmm. on a Friday. Just something slight. All right. You're in the loop. here on Sports Radio 610. Coming up next, this is definitely a lot lighter than sports finance. Let's get into our lunchtime confessions presented by the Men's Clinic. We'll do it next.
Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Next.
Sometimes it's sports, sometimes it's not. Whatever it is, Reggie and John are keeping it real. It's In the Loop's Lunchtime Confessions, presented by the Men's Clinic on Sports Radio 610.
Watch this. These are my confessions.
All right, sometimes you just got to admit it. You just got to say it. I was wrong. Not about my bracket, of course.
I was waiting for that. I was like, all right, where's it going?
Yeah. Definitely right about that. No, but you know what I was wrong about? I caught myself yesterday, like, hanging in there with the TNT crew talking about college basketball. Chuck and Kenny and... When this first started, I thought, this ain't gonna... You could tell they didn't watch any games. They were just sort of just riffing on whatever. We knew they were really good on NBA, of course. They're great. But I'm like, I want to hear everything they say now. Like, it's actually, I don't know, it's just more research, more experience, whatever it is with the college game and the tournament. Like, they're as fun to watch with their college basketball commentary as they are in the NBA.
Well, here's the thing that I've had trouble with when it comes to...
Were you out on them early, too? Because I was like, eh.
I'm not out on them fully. I have qualms, right? Mm-hmm. The problem is, they are easily the most entertaining studio show that exists mm-hmm. for professional American sports, right? And that's also including, like, the Fox guys on baseball
oh, yeah.
or what have you, right?
Yeah.
I think that they just do a fantastic job because they have two and a half dudes with wild charisma. Mm-hmm. Shaq is a wildly charismatic person. And Charles Barkley might be one of the most charismatic dudes in all of American sports outside of what Magic
in
Johnson.
In culture. In pop culture.
Outside of Magic Johnson.
Sports.
Magic Johnson might be the only one in basketball
yeah.
that has him.
Yeah.
And that's saying something. Mm-hmm. Right? They have all of that. They have so much fun. And I think that at least I come to sports, and I imagine a lot of people mm-hmm. come to sports for the fun, the excitement of it. And they do that so well. You talk about not watching the games. They still don't. Like, there's a lot of times where their analysis is downright bad because they are leaning on cliches.
It is better, but I'm just entertained. When they first started, yeah. I'm like, these guys are going to be awful. It's going to be, like, awful.
Yeah.
They're good. It's fun.
And I think
I think part of it is also the tournament. You're not in it for the teams, you know, for the insight on the, you know, the Creighton backup guard, you know.
Or you don't have the relationships and all yeah. that stuff.
But I'm like, I had fun. Like, I'm watching halftime now.
And I think part of why it works is, one, yes, they are fun, but they do a good job of marrying those guys. Like, here comes Jay Wright. Here comes some of the guys that have been on the ground watching a majority of these college teams yeah. all the way through the year. So you have some of the fun that those guys can bring with a little bit better insight into what's happening on the ground. I think that, college basketball does a really good job with their studio shows this time of year.
These are my confessions.
I also have a college basketball confession. McNeese coach Will Wade, who already, by the way, there's reporting that he's already has another job.
He gone.
That he's, before the tournament started, there was already reporting that he was the next guy to take up, what is it, the NC State job there in North Carolina. But that's not what this is about. He said that because of March Madness and obviously McNeese getting a solid win.
You referenced this earlier.
All of the stuff that's happening with Amir Khan and everything. The school's enrollment is up 3%. Applications are up 10%. And they've gotten, quote, $25 million worth of free advertising. Right. He said that's going to change the area, changes the five parish area there in Louisiana. I got to admit, I still don't fully understand the people that are like, oh, you did good in March Madness? That's where I'm going to college. That's what we're making this decision on. And I'm not even the person that's saying you make the decision on like how good the school is.
Yeah.
We're not going to talk about like what the experience is, what the demographics are, where we're going. They're just like, nah, McNeese, they won. They won in the first round. Yeah, that's where I'm
going. Sign me up.
Yeah. Really?
Sign
is that
me
where
up.
The kids are? Really?
It is funny because they are kids. And they just like, oh, McNeese is, they got that cool aura kid. They got a basketball team.
You're not going to be with him.
No, you're not.
You're not going to be
Brother,
with him.
You're going to Lake Charles.
I'm going to be hanging
out in Lake Charles.
I think he should do a sixth year of eligibility, or fifth, or whatever it is, of eligibility, and go to NC State and be their aura guy. He'd be a legend. The NIL money's there.
I was like, but is that going to translate? Like, that's one of the tough things about this time of year is that it's the special part of it, right? Someone said he was making it by himself, like he's the new Sister Jean. But hey man, go ahead and cash out, my boy. Go ahead and cash out. I'm just so amazed that the school itself, and that's why these schools pay so much in sports. In theory, they are that is the front porch of the school. People see and know about the school because of the basketball team or the football team or what have you. I still just find it amazing. Like I don't fully get into the mindset of the 17, 18 year old that's like, wow, I saw Florida Gulf Coast play really good basketball. Although we did see their campus to see that they had like a lazy river on campus. Maybe that did more of the work.
They do?
Florida Gulf Coast.
Oh, I was going to say, wait a minute.
Because you remember when they were doing the Dunk City? How many years ago was that when Florida Gulf Coast was out here Dunk City?
That's
up, and then we found out that they had a fantastic campus. All right, I get that. I don't get the people that are like, well, Will Wade got these boys hooping, so I'm gonna go study architecture over there. I don't fully get that.
By the way, just real quick, figure before you get there, I had to look it up. What is McNeese State known best for academically? That would be... they have the number 12 most affordable master's degree.
Oh, okay.
And early childhood development. So, you know, preschool teachers.
Okay.
I don't know about going to that one, man.
There'll be a lot of preschool teachers coming out of McNeese.
Everybody trying to get out that field.
These are my confessions.
I got to confess, I be Googling some random stuff, man. So a couple days ago, I was sitting there watching one of my favorite shows, Leave It to Beaver. The old
Are you for
black
real?
White. I love that show.
Wow.
You were just talking about Little Rascals. Guessed. You were just talking about Little Rascals.
Yeah.
You like those old shows.
Yeah. I never really watched Little Rascals like that. But
you're the one who be watching those old school shows. I'm always like watching, MeTV or whatever.
Andy Griffith? You watch Andy Griffith?
Andy Griffin, yep.
Oh, man.
I like Bonanza. So, Leave It to Beaver, like, I could literally sit there and watch it all day long and crack up. But this is my confession. This is what I Googled while sitting here watching this show.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder how many black people ever appeared in this show.
Do you have a number? Do you have an answer?
Yes, I actually Googled this.
Okay.
Because I've never seen
Let me guess. Zero.
You're wrong.
I am going with... Four.
So two technically appeared on this show.
Technically?
Yeah, but one was in the credits. So it's a lady by the name of Kim Hamilton, and she was the maid, and she only appeared, that was the only time somebody actually appeared.
On the show.
As a black person, but it was the cameo in the show at some point. It was a black man exiting a dairy truck.
Okay. All right. So you can get on if he was the help.
Technically, it was only two people.
Two.
I was just sitting there thinking, like, dang, like, ain't no, like you don't see a black, you don't see a black kid in the school.
Nothing.
You don't see
nothing.
You don't see a black man walking down the street. Like, and they had episodes where it's like crowds of people and stuff like that. I'm like, hey, not one.
Nope. Not one.
So I'm like, let me see if one ever appeared in this show. So I'm like, I was sitting there like, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Only two people.
That's what Google is for, man. You're just curious about stuff. So you remember what we used to do before we had like the internet and all the answers at our fingertips when we had questions like that? We just made it up. We just made it up, or we asked somebody else who made it up, mm-hmm. or you maybe went and found an encyclopedia. But largely, we just made it up.
Man, those encyclopedias killed me. Yeah. All those school projects, the worst.
Oh, man.
These are my confessions.
All right, so Stephen A. Smith. I mean, I guess my confession is I wish we could go back to yesterday and do some buy or sell and sell the hell out of this. Did you see what he said about Bronny?
No.
Did you see what he said today about Bronny?
I didn't. Mm-mm.
I've always believed that this kid had potential. Once I watched him, I knew he would be in the NBA. Talking about Bronny. Come on, man. Is he just backing up because of the whole LeBron thing and all that? You know, I always knew that kid was good.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man.
You don't make it to $100 million and talking every day on the air if you don't find something like that. If you don't have
a little
bit of wiggle.
Who's he trying to fool?
I don't know what he's doing.
Who's
man.
He trying to fool?
I don't know what he's doing. He did a whole press run after LeBron stepped to him.
Yeah.
I'm like, dang, this dude was on Fox News, CNN.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, what is he doing?
I always knew that kid was good. The day after he scores 17 points. In a loss.
That's so, right.
He was pretty much John Amos in Coming to America.
Yeah.
I knew that kid was special.
Yes. Exactly. That's exactly what he was. That's exactly what he's doing.
He's got his own money.
These are my confessions.
This confession actually just came together. Earlier we were talking about Mr. Freeman. Or Friedkin, rather. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I don't want to say his name incorrectly. Dan Friedkin, who emerged as a potential owner for an NHL team, mm-hmm. Expansion team that would happen in Houston. And obviously, the obvious choice would be to put it in the Toyota Center and play there.
Yeah.
And we were talking about potential attendance. We were kind of talking about it in a break. Just, you know, I think that there's people in Houston, especially with how transient it is, and just obviously people in Houston that would support Houston, support a hockey team. I think it would just, you need to have your niche audience. Yeah. That's there frequently, and you can make it work. But then I just started thinking about the capacity
mm-hmm.
of the building, and I went to look at the capacity of the buildings in the NHL, and there are a lot that are way bigger than the Toyota Center, especially when you talk about the capacity, not as a basketball arena, but as a hockey arena, where you have fewer of those courtside
seats.
Because
of the rink.
Because the rink is just much bigger. And I was looking at it, the bottom five average attendance arenas, when it comes to actually attendance, the fifth smallest is the New York Islanders.
Mm-hmm.
They play at UBS Arena. They're at like 16,000
mm-hmm.
thereabouts when it comes to like their average attendance this season. Just rough estimates, that feels like that might be close to what the capacity would be in Houston.
Yeah, because it's about 17-ish, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm very concerned about the idea of, does Gary Bettman and the NHL look at that and say, we're not leaving ourselves much room for Houston to be able to produce the amount of capacity.
You're
that
trying
we
to build
want.
Another stadium for us?
I'm not trying. I'm afraid that they would just go, well, bleep it, you guys.
Yeah.
The numbers
maybe
aren't
put that
in
where the Astrodome is.
that's just scary. I was just like, I was getting really excited about the opportunity, the possibility of the Arrows, and of course my stupid brain googling, just like Figgy was talking about. Yeah. I started googling, and now I've given myself reasons to doubt mm-hmm. that the NHL would give Houston an expansion team. So thanks, brain.
Yeah.
I guess that is the end of a confession. I was hoping that you would have a fun one, but nope. I just left y'all with sadness. That's what I do sometimes. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. There's people talking about the Leave It to Beaver. They said they grew up in Clear Lake back when in school when there was only three or four black classmates, and they were, someone else was mentioning, show was filmed during segregated times. That's right.
Yeah, I thought about that as I was Googling too.
That is fair. All right, coming up next here in Loop on Sports Radio 610, the Astro season, or sorry, that's the wrong one, mm-hmm. 30 visit season where, you know, the Texans and other NHL or NFL teams will have players come in and visit. Are the Texans telling us anything with their top 30 visits? Let's break that down next.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents In the Loop with John Lopez and Reggie Atitula.
A man we pay.
Love the song. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. We're having a fun, funky Friday going on here. And it's top 30 visit season, right? We've gotten past the scouting combine. Pro Day's kind of happening, and teams are meeting with various players in various capacities and then come to the building. And the Texans have had some people come through. It's not the full grip of folks. We're starting to get some visits that have come through, confirmed. And, I mean, are we learning anything, or can we learn anything from the visits that the Texans are garnering, right? Who's coming through? Can that tell us maybe where they're leaning, or can we get a better idea of what could possibly happen when draft day comes around?
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of mirrors, you know, and subterfuge and things that NFL teams do to kind of throw people off the scent of what they're doing. But top 30 visits are a little different. Top 30 different visits, which are starting now.
It matches also with local visits. I think top 30 kind of fits in with that same space as well.
So. Yeah. Because those are like official, they oftentimes last all day. Like sometimes they even do medicals, you know, not just interviews. They put them in the room with other coaches. It's not like at the Combine or the Senior Bowl. The Combine's a little more thorough. Those are 15 minutes only though, but you know, slightly more thorough. But top 30 visits are no joke. And so, you know, I started looking. There's not a lot of reporting right now on the Texans, on really very many teams, but certainly on the Texans in terms of top 30 visits. But two names popped up on me for me, and both of them are interesting. The fact that of the top 30 visits reported, only two offensive linemen are associated with the Texans.
And actually, I think one of them is the top 30, and I think the other one was
in the combine. No, there wasn't the combine, but being reported that, you know, there's interest or whatever. Mm-hmm. One's officially official.
Yes.
And those guys are Oregon tackle Josh Connerly Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And Tyler Booker. Tyler Booker is one that, you know, after I saw this, that they visited with him at the combine, and there's, you know, some sort of discussion that he's going to be a top 30 visit, whatever it may be. It made it very, very interesting to me because you're not going to invest all this on those visits and not have some level of interest. And those are the only two offensive linemen that the Texans have shown this interest in, okay? Or at least even interviewed.
As of yet.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I stumbled back to this audio. It made the rounds during the combine, and I'm like, if that's not swarm, what is? This is Tyler Booker being asked about his play on the offensive line.
There's legal assault out there, and I love football because the brand of football that I play, I make guys not love football anymore, and I do that every day, every down, by really just giving them my all and letting them know I'm not going to let up. The thing I love the most about football is taking the love away from other people.
I make guys not love football anymore.
Yeah.
If that's not swarm, what is? So I just thought, like, okay, we haven't had those two names very high on our list of you know, topics of discussion, so to speak, when it came to the offensive line and the draft.
Yeah, Connerly, I guess I've just kind of missed talking about him, because when we talk about the tackles, obviously we've mentioned the idea of the guys who are almost untouchable when you talk about a late first round. Will Campbell, the tackle out of LSU, Armand Membu, tackle that played at Missouri. Those guys are going to be top 10 guys, at least in consensus kind of mock draft situations. Outside of that, Kelvin Banks Jr., Josh Simmons, those are guys who have felt like they are going to be the next of the tackles in that space that could be close. But soon after that, Josh Connerly out of Oregon is one of those guys that's there. I think one of the drafts I'm looking at has him kind of going to Kansas City at 31, or mock drafts rather. But yeah, I guess we keep looking at the guys ahead, seeing like, can you get one of those guys? He is one of those guys that's kind of in that space as well. And so I haven't really focused on him. But we talked earlier about Tyler Booker. There was a point in time where the mock drafts had a lot of Tyler Booker love.
He's a bad dude.
He talks about it in that way. The testing, you know, and obviously testing is not by any means the end all be all. In fact, we know for a fact that the Texans aren't all that super high on the testing. They they train in a little bit more on tape and what they see with the guys actually playing football.
And interviews,
of course. Yes, absolutely. So, I mean, it sounds like when you get to interviews, this guy in Tyler Booker is exactly what you want. He's, you know, a strong dude, sizable, feels like the right place. He fits He fits the type when it comes to...
He makes people not love football anymore.
Yeah, there's that when it comes to the swarm, but then there's also he's an Alabama boy, right? Mm-hmm. When you talk about going to one of those major programs. And there's some growth that he needs, right? Does not have great lateral quickness or, range as a run blocker, mm-hmm. according to NFL.com. So, like, there's some things that you still need, but it makes sense as to why this is a guy that they were interested in and that they wanted to talk to. And Connerly, again, it makes sense when you're doing your due diligence on the possibility of maybe even getting a tackle, especially as you look at trying to make this offensive line, not just for this season, but going forward. That all makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know that I see anything that we could not have surmised just by looking at the circumstance that this team is
in. Yeah, I do feel like if we do get that reporting that Booker's coming in, I think we need to kind of change the way we look at things. As I mentioned, those visits are very meaningful. And obviously, you don't draft them necessarily. They've had a lot of top 30 visits that maybe they didn't draft any in that particular year. But I think it definitely means something. Are they telling us something here? In terms of these two guys and bringing them in, or at least one of them for sure?
I mean, that they're doing their due diligence. Mm-hmm. I think that's one. Two, that the tight might hold. Mm-hmm. But again, I feel like they might have learned what they need to learn about Gray Zabel. But that's one of the things where you wonder, like, if you're talking about a guy that just kind of fits the mold in a lot of different ways, hey, he feels very swarmy himself.
Mm-hmm.
But is that North Dakota State going to hold him back? At least we know that there's a couple of guys, the Alabama, Oregon, we know that those guys not only play at big schools, but those are schools or programs, especially with Dan Lanning going to Oregon, mm-hmm. that play a big, strong, physical brand of football as well. It does feel like this organization likes leaning on the idea of big programs likely have
SEC programs,
the opportunity and the resources to produce big-time players.
I also think they're telling us this. I mean, for sure, Connerly's coming in. He's a projected mid to late first round, if not higher. Tackle. So what they're telling us if
May
this
1st, yeah.
So what they're telling us if this holds, that they're looking heavily at the offensive line with that first pick. I still think wide receiver is big. I looked at the list, and I don't know if you have it in front of you, but
I have one. Yeah.
I didn't see any wide receivers on their list.
There is one because remember Matthew Golden was here recently.
That's right.
He's a local visit, and that's why you kind of because
the local.
There's the top 30 visits where you have that allotment of players that you can bring in, but you also have this thing called the local visits where people that are from a general radius around where you play and or went to school within that radius can come in as a local visit, mm-hmm. and you don't have to top 30 them. And that makes sense for Matthew mm-hmm. Golden, who, you know, obviously played at Texas, also played at Houston, like from the area. Like, you get a chance to get him as a local. I imagine he would have been a top 30 if he was outside. And that is one of those things that kind of cuts into one of the things I think you were kind of getting to is maybe they're telling us that they're going to go lineman. Matthew Golden is one of those guys that if he's there at 25, you absolutely is mm-hmm. in play. So I don't know that this is fully telling us where they're leaning, but at least that those are some of the a couple of the plays that they're looking at. Now, one of the things I found interesting, the other confirmed top 30 here for me that I'm looking at is a man named Siobhan Revel, I believe, and I did not check how to say the pronunciation of his name, so apologies to everyone involved if that is not the correct pronunciation. He is a cornerback from East Carolina.
Yeah.
So that is a position, one, that you don't need top-line talent at. You need depth.
Mm-hmm.
But also, that's an East Carolina dude, which, again, I spent a lot of breath today, at the very least, talking about Nick Caserio's type when it comes to drafting. And that is a dude who is a small school guy. But that's a guy who is ranked as, maybe the fourth, fifth on a consensus mm-hmm. big board when it comes to cornerbacks. And maybe you're looking at second round as a cornerback type guy.
That's what I was thinking.
I don't think that that's something that the Texans are necessarily in play for. I don't even know if should. Like, I don't know if I should feel myself so bold as to say that they should not do that. However, with the things that, and again, I understand I'm talking about needs, and that's not the optimal way of going about doing the draft. I do wonder, are they really going to take a cornerback in that space of the second round or maybe even the third round if he falls that place with the things that you would imagine they wouldn't want to garner in those first few picks?
It would be a surprise, but I think they've done stranger things than that from the outside looking in.
Yeah.
In terms of some of the players that they picked.
Yeah, so that was one of the things that I saw that I was like, huh,
mm-hmm.
within the visits. Some other visits that they've had, Amarion Hampton is a running back that is, again, he's another guy that you're looking at. I was talking about him as like a second round mm-hmm. guy. There's been talk recently that, you know, Ashton Gentry, obviously the top guy out of Boise State when it comes to running backs, he looks like one of those guys that could be some level of generational, a term that I use too often, and yet here I am doing it. He's probably going to go high. And then I've seen situations where mock drafts have had Jenty going in the top 10 and then Omarion Hampton going at like 12,
mm-hmm.
Or it's in the, you know, kind of before you even get to the teens or in that teens area to where a second running back going that high. I don't know that. I mean, obviously you
do know how I feel about that.
And that was a combine conversation that they had with him. But like, I don't know. Again, in a similar place to the cornerback out of East Carolina, I don't know if that's something that I think you could even really dabble with. At the in the heights where it feels like that.
Oh, I think you could dabble in a second round. I think you can dabble in either of those positions in the second round. I think first round is going to be the player that they think can immediately come in and help. I think it's going to come down to wide receiver and interior line. But second round, you guys know where I land on the running backs conversation.
Yeah, you would like to add another running back into that room.
Yeah.
But for me personally,
that ain't happening.
Adding another.
Keep saying that.
I've been saying that for 5 years, man. I don't think it's happening this year.
Hey, maybe this is the year. This is the year where
this is the year.
This is the year when
it has to have a good run, like a
drafted running back. Second
with,
or,
with them having Joe Mixon, I really don't see it now, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sorry. If we're going to talk about running the football, I would like to help running the football by having a stout offensive line first.
Of course.
That's where I would like to start.
But
first.
Second round, that's a premium running back.
It is. Yeah. It is. And we'll see what they do there. But mm-hmm. as of right now, the top 30 visits plus local is really just three guys. Mm-hmm. It's Connerly, it's Golden, and interestingly enough, Siobhan Revel. Cornerback out of East Carolina. Obviously, that'll continue to build. It's one of the things that I was thinking about earlier when we were talking about the disrespect and all the national media, and somebody was talking about it just shows that they don't have insight.
Yeah.
Points again to the fact that it's a tight-lipped organization. We find things out when we do, and then sometimes we find things out when they make a trade and they send the left tackle to Washington on the day. So maybe they're not telling us but so much mm-hmm. in these things, and we might be reading too much in it, but this is what we got. We're going to try and read the tea leaves. As we go. All right, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. We keep rolling on this funky Friday. Let's talk about the Astros. Their season starts in less than a week.
How about that?
Quiet as it's kept. And Lopez thinks that the toughest decision to make might not be the one that we've talked about a lot. So let's try and talk about this next.